Welcome to My Life Chassidus Applied, episode 444. It's a special Yud Aleph Nissen and Pesach edition. So we'll begin being at Yud Aleph Nissen, so good Yom Tov. Mazali gave her the words that the Rebbe would so often say about a birthday. So for sure applies to the Rebbe himself, the birthday of the Rebbe. 121 years ago, Tofrei Samach Beis. And we're now in the year Tof Shin Pei Gimel. So let's begin by talking about that, and then we'll talk about Pesach and some other subjects. This program is in honor of the newborn boy, Eliyahu Chaim Altoiz, born on the 28th of Adar 5783, just now. And it's a merit of Baruch Binyamin ben Menucha Lana and Miriam bas Chayesar Altoiz, Kusil ben Leah Rochel and Rochel bas Liba Farkash, dedicated by Pinchas Todes by Miriam Sarah bas Rochel Altoiz. Should have a lot of nachas from their newborn and from all their children. So Yud Aleph Nissen, there's so much to say. I think above all, to begin on a personal note, on this day the Rebbe was born, the Rebbe of the seventh generation, Deir HaShvi, as the Rebbe categorized the generation, when he accepted and assumed the leadership in Tov Shin Yud Aleph, Yud Shvat. And frankly, I wouldn't be giving this program, I wouldn't be sitting here, were not for the Rebbe, as so many of us, so many thousands, or hundreds of thousands, or even millions of us, inspired, educated, ignited, motivated, all the words you can use to explain the Rebbe's impact on this generation. Channeling all the previous Rabbeim, all the previous generations, into a blueprint for how we shall fulfill our mission in finishing the job of making Adira B'Tachteinu V'Shachanti B'Seichem, bringing godliness into every part of existence through Yafutsu Ma'inasecha Chutsa, spreading the wellsprings outward, Chutsa Shein Chutsa Memeno, to the farthest outskirts, as Mashiach told the Baal Shem Tov, that when that will happen, I will come, Mashiach will come. That's what the Rebbe dedicated his entire Nesiyas to, and it continues. Even after Chav Zayin Adar and after Gimel Tammuz, the mission is a Nitzchizdika one, the Rebbe's directives, the Rebbe's teachings. And in many ways, my exposure to Chassidus, my career, if you want to put it that way, including this program, Chassidus Applied, is a direct outgrowth of that. The many years that I spent sitting at the Rebbe's feet, standing at the Rebbe's feet, I should say, and listening and absorbing and internalizing the Farbrengens, and then doing the best to try to document it for posterity, really informs everything I do today, whether it's for the community, meaning in a language that is more using the Torah language, or whether it's speaking to in the language of Chutzo, in a language that people who may not yet know Hebrew or Yiddish or the themes need to explain. So, on a personal thank you to the Rebbe, and of course, acknowledging that on the Rebbe's birthday. I think each of us has the same responsibility on a day like this. It's not just a celebration. We know the Rebbe, what the Rebbe wanted of us was to use a day like this, not just to honor him, but to honor him by doing his shlichus, by fulfilling what he expects and what he wants of each one of us. And that is to learn the Rebbe's Torah, which is the Torah of Chassidus and the Torah of Nigla, and to bring it down through Avedis HaTfila and davening it to Kima Mitzvahs Behidur, and in every possible way, reaching every Jew, every human being on earth. That's how you honor the Rebbe's birthday. Share a story. When the Rebbe turned 80 years old, Shnas HaShmeinim was Tov Shin Mem Beis, the year was 1982. So, uncharacteristically, around Hanukkah time, a good few months before Yud Aleph Nissen, I decided to write to the Rebbe that in honor of the upcoming birthday of 80 years, perhaps a suggestion is to print all the maimorim that the Rebbe delivered on Yud Aleph Nissen. We had by then 15 maimorim, maybe. The maimor, of course, Tov Shin Yud Beis, Adnai Sfasei Tiftach, a maimor from Tov Shin Chov Beis, And from Tav Shalom at Aleph and on, every year was a Fabrengen. Yer Aleph Nissen. So there was a good 15, I don't remember the exact number. The Rebbe responded, Ein Azman Groma Lagiyim. There's no time to edit them, for the Rebbe to edit them. So therefore, Yatziu is something that doesn't need my editing. Well, the Rebbe didn't just say no. He said, Yatziu, suggest something. And this was for the Rebbe's birthday. So I felt very honored that here the Rebbe is telling us to suggest something. So what do you think I did? I did this extensive research. I started calling everyone I knew. And what would you suggest? And there are many different ideas. Finally, it came down to two key ideas, all part of one general idea. And that's what I wrote to the Rebbe. I wrote back to the Rebbe, and Behemshchot, the Rebbe wrote Yatziyu. So if they're speaking true B'rev Yeis, they're speaking different people, here's the suggestion. The suggestion is to publish a book, a journal, a kevitz, that the first half would be Shar HaTeira, would be things connected to a birthday, connected to Shmeinim Shana, Kapitel Pei Aleph, which would be the beginning of the saying, chapter 81 in Tehillim, with its Tzemach Tzedek's commentaries, and Yal Eir, and some other things we found around Pei and Pei Aleph. The second part of it would be a Shar Maisa, which would be a collection of top articles of the Rebbe's Pa'ulas and activities all over the world over these past years. So one is the Rebbe's Torah, one is the Rebbe's activities. The Rebbe responded, Ach v'rak kevitz Torah ani, only Torah. Didn't want to have the second half. And the Rebbe then added actually some elements to add into this kevitz, and that's when we published the kevitz Yer Aleph Nissen. But here you see the Rebbe, classic Rebbe. After we were matzi asus d'l'tata, now came an asus d'l'eila. At the bottom of the page, after responding to do that, the Rebbe's Heisofis and additions to what we had written in detail, the Rebbe wrote up a whole piece, the main thing, to publish a special Heisofis, a special edition of Tanya. What would be special about it? First of all, obviously the latest edition, but it should also have the Sharblots, the cover pages of all the Tanyas wherever they've been printed so far. And this was before the Rebbe came out with the Mivtza later, 2 years later, that print Tanya in every city all over the world. So it's now thousands and thousands of editions. Then it wasn't yet thousands. And in detail, the Rebbe wrote what size, what color. There should be two bendlach, which is like bookmarks that are printed, like the ribbons that are printed inside the book. In detail. And that was that. So of course, different editors from Kohos got together and began to prepare that. We didn't know that it would ultimately lead, once they prepared and printed that Tanya, that the Rebbe said to print extra a lot of them, and by the Fabrengen of Yud Aleph Nissen, the Rebbe's 80th birthday, actually handed out the Tanya to every person. It went to the hours, to the wee hours, to the point that even in the morning, people who weren't by the Fabrengen were waking up and they were still getting Tanyas. The Rebbe stood. So instead of everybody in a birthday, I remember thinking, birthdays, we give the birthday person a gift. And here the Rebbe was giving out a gift, giving. He used the birthday to give. And give what? Tanya. So I had a little part in it. The Rebbe said, Yatziyu, we should suggest. And then the Rebbe made his main suggestion. We printed the Kevitz Yer Aleph Nissen. And for the record, every year after that, Kevitz Yer Aleph Nissen came out till this day. Wachen prepare a Kevitz that takes all the Maimonim of Chassidus, including the Magid and the Baal Shem Tov, and all the way back to the Arizal, and give the commentaries on that Kapitel Tilim that the Rebbe is saying this year would be, since it's 121 years, would be Kapitel Kuf Chav Beis. Okay, so now, that's just a Chvevusa de Milsa. So it tells us right there, you see, how the Rebbe looks at his day, the day of Yer Aleph Nissen, a day of learning, a day of spreading Torah, spreading Chassidus. Someone asked the question, did the Rebbe once say the best birthday present he would like to receive would be an increase in learning Torah? And if so, would that be the best way for us to celebrate Yer Aleph Nissen? Absolutely. Rebbe said a number of times, you want to honor me, do what I do, which is learn Torah, obviously Mekayim Mitzvahs, and take it all and be Mashpia, reach as many people as you can reach, include all that into how we honor your Aleph Nis. So with that, let's read a few other questions, now that we know what the essence of this day is about. And above all, I should add, since the Rebbe made it his primary shlichus, learning Torah, but specifically the Yoni Geula Mashiach, that this is the last generation of Golas and the first generation of Geula, as I mentioned, the seventh generation from the Alter Rebbe that will finally concretize, especially around the Inyanim of Geula Mashiach, which of course is the essence of spreading Chassidus to every corner of the world, which prepares the world for Mala Oretz Deyes Hashem Kamayim Liyam Mechasim, a world filled with divine knowledge as the waters cover the sea. So another question that's asked is, was asked, what were some of the important telegrams the Rebbe Rashab sent to the Rebbe's parents right before and right after the Rebbe was born? So we know from the Rebbe Tzachanez Shimas and from other places that there were at least six telegrams that were sent, but we don't have the actual text. So we don't really know what it says there. What we do know, Rebbe Tzachanez said that she was told by her husband, and I think this is based on, because the Rebbe Rashab said something either similar or maybe this was one of the directives, that every time the child wakes up, meaning the Rebbe, to nurse, she'll wash negel vaser before he's nursed. This was a special directive. So you could assume that there was definitely directives of that nature. The specifics, as I said again, we don't know. We also know, we heard this, the name of the Rebbetzin, Shternesaret, which is the Rebbe Rashab's Rebbetzin, that the Rebbe Rashab had suggested that one of the granddaughters, his granddaughters, meaning one of the children of the Friedrich Rebbe, should be a shidduch for one of the children of Rab Levi Yitzchok. And indeed, the Rebbe married the Rebbetzin Chaim Mushke. So more than that, we don't know, but it's enough to say that the fact is that there was definitely a cognizance and awareness as a special neshama was coming into this world. Many times I tried to research what was going on in the year Tofrei Samach Beis, around Pesach time, before Aleph Nissan time. The year was obviously a momentous year in general, especially during that period, that tumultuous and period of upheaval in Tsarist Russia, I'm talking here 1902. But regardless, a Rebbe was born that would ultimately become Rebbe yet many years later, in the year Tavshin Yud. And we, as a result, have a Rebbe that carries the Rebbe Rashab and the Friedrich Rebbe and all the Rabbein before, as I mentioned before, to our generation. Okay. Should we put, since we're talking about the Rebbe's Torah, so someone asks, should we put more emphasis I'm learning my modern chassidus from the Rebbe instead of chassidus from the previous Rebbe, because the Rebbe's chassidus is more relevant to our generation? This is a classic question that comes up from time to time. I want to begin with a story I heard once from one of the Rebbe's secretaries, Rabbi Groner. He said when the Rebbe, when a kuntres would come out, a new publication of a maimer, says the Rebbe's day was completely different. The Rebbe would be so excited and so passionate about it. He would literally walk around with the kuntres in his hand, and everything else that day, we call it secondary, but was like, because it came, the Rebbe would answer and answer, answer, but he always held the kuntres in his hand. That was like the centerpiece of the day. It was once a kuntres that was published from the Rebbe Rashab, a maimer from the Rebbe Rashab, not sure which one, and the Rebbe, in his excitement, expressed himself that Mekenesh Fashtein Chassidus under the Rebbe Rashab. You can't understand Chassidus without the Rebbe Rashab. So Rabbi Gronu said to the Rebbe, what about the Rebbe's Maimor? So the Rebbe said, one thing is Mitzad Diskashus. I was talking about understanding Chassidus. Now that doesn't mean the Rebbe was negating, God forbid, that you can't understand Chassidus with the Rebbe's Maimor. Obviously, the Rebbe's Maimor take the Rebbe Rashab and the Friedrich Rebbe and all the Rabbeim and explain it even further. But there's a role that the Rebbe Rashab plays that the Rebbe was emphasizing. But you see, on the other hand, the element of iskashus. You find this by the Rabbein before also, the Rebbe Kochsich, that people should learn the Friedrich Rebbe's Maimorim in that period of time, and the Friedrich Rebbe, B'chaim Chayusei Baal Medein, Tzad iskashus. This does not negate, this doesn't mean you're learning and there's no understanding, God forbid. Of course there's understanding, but it has that additional element. So there's no question that there's an element of learning the Rebbe's Torah, especially because mitzad his kashrus part, which is the connection. Furthermore, every Rebbe, even though all the Rabbeim are one entity, one Mo'ir, Shalshalas is an Oir, not a Mo'ir, as the Rebbe explained once, which means one luminary, but each luminary has its so-called reflection, its channel. Alter Rebbe, we know, is Chochmet, Mitle Rebbe Binet, Samak Tzadik Das, and the Rebbe Malchus. So the fact is, like the Rebbe explains with Mitzvah, that I have a Zohar Tvei Tvei, that every person has a mitzvah that is specifically careful in. That's a shot. It's a gate through all the other mitzvahs travel. So it's not negating. It's on the contrary. It's the channeling. So to understand all the chassidus channels through the Rebbe's mamorim. And indeed, now we have many of the Rebbe's mugadik and mamorim. And you see how they encompass so much from the previous Rebbe. But at the end of the day, chassidus is one entity and one body. It's like someone saying, I'll only learn mashah and not other commentaries, or I'll only learn one Gemara. I'm not comparing exactly, because this is Nasi Hador. But nevertheless, to understand Chassidus, you have to learn Tanya, and you have to learn all the Svarim of the Alter Rebbe, Teire, Lekut Teire, then the Mitler Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, the Rebbe Marash, the Rebbe Rasham, Friedrich Rebbe, and the Rebbe. And then you have the full picture. So it's really a matter of prioritizing, because you can't learn it all in one shot. So there's no question inside the Hiskashas, there's learning through the lens of the Rebbe. Some people like to choose that to be the place where they learn also the deeper sugyas of chassidus. But at the end of the day, the Rebbe did say what he said about the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab is the Rambam of chassidus. Samach Vav and Ayin Beis remain the classics that they are. And like an old Torah, Kol HaTorah Kul is necessary, and especially in this context. So this isn't a competition. It's all part of one entity. All the Rabbeim are one. But it just puts things into some context, especially at Aleph Nissen. Of course, the focus should be on things that are the Rebbe's teachings directly, but the Rebbe's teachings are the other Rabbeim's teachings. I once heard in that context, if I may, how did Lukut HaSichas begin? We know the Rebbe edited the first Maimorim and edited some of the Rebbe's talks in the early years, but then he said he didn't have time to edit. So many of the Sichas were not edited. They were always looking the Chassidim to find ways to have the Rebbe edit. The Rebbe then came out with a directive in the mid-50s, that Bochum, early 50s, that Bochum should go on Shabbos to go to shuls and chazer chassidus. So they came up with an idea. Tzach was organizing these taluchas, these visits, and they felt, okay, we take the Rebbe's sicha, send it into the Rebbe, and suggest the Rebbe to edit it, and this would be what the Bochum had, chemer, they would have material for which to chazer. So they suggested it to the Rebbe. The Rebbe said, you have Teireh, Lukut HaTeireh. Every week you have a maimer from the Alter Rebbe on that parsha. They should take that and use that. So the response was, they want something from the Rebbe, which of course was the wrong thing to say. The Rebbe said, how could you compare? Rabbeinu HaGadol? Like, what is this? Okay, so they felt they lost the opportunity until someone came up with an idea. I'm not sure who, David Raskin or Rabbi Yael, I'm not sure. And they wrote to the Rebbe, yes, of course the Alter Rebbe is chassidus, but they want it through the way the Rebbe explains it so we can explain it to people today. And then the Rebbe started being magia, these chazoras dach, the limudach, which was to the chazor in the shuls. In other words, the word is, kol masha talmud vosik osel lechadish, nitin lemesh mesinai. Even if it's a chidish of the talmud vosik, of this special student, this prodigious student, it's still nit lemesh mesinai. And that was what the Rebbe, when they said that, no problem, my explanation of Teireh Elokut HaTeireh. This doesn't take away from the Rebbe's additions, it just understands Teireh in a broader sense instead of looking at it as, God forbid, a competition. It's not that way. Teireh is accumulative, especially Teireh Sachsidus. Okay. In the 19th, so this question is, what happened to the art and gifts that Rebbe received at Yud Aleph Nissen Fabrengas? Yeah, we see that all the time. We see the videos and pictures, people bringing gifts and art and different things. So someone says like this, in the 1970s, an artist from Russia came to Fabrengen Yud Aleph Nissen and gave the Rebbe a gift of a large portrait of the Rebbe he painted. And he actually showed it to the Elam, I remember that. I think I remember the artist holding up the painting to show everyone in 770, and the Rebbe said jokingly, the audience likes the original better. My question is, what happens to that painting after the Fabrengen? Did the Rebbe keep it and hang it somewhere? And also, there are many other times people brought books, paintings, and other gifts for the Rebbe. Keys to cities, ceremonial keys. Did the Rebbe keep them, or did he give them away to other people to have? Well, he sent them all to the Rebbe's library. In the Rebbe's library, there's a whole display, a whole collection of all these gifts. So they're all there. I think from time to time, you could see some of them. And everything was saved in that sense. That's as far as I know. If the Rebbe gave it to anybody else, I don't think so. Now, maybe there are some exceptions. So I believe everything is in the Rebbe's library, which just shows you the value of all these gifts. And, okay. In that spirit, someone wrote to me something that, again, that's somewhat personal, but also connected to Yeralf Nissen. About Hanochas. I had the privilege, of course, to be a Chazer and a Maniach, which was to remember almost verbatim the Rebbe's Fabringens on Shabbos and Yontif, when no notes were taken, no recordings were made, and also to be Maniach, to commit it to paper and document it for posterity. Hi, Rabbi Jacobson. I recently heard your talk given to a local shul, which I found highly enjoyable and informative. I first want to say thank you for sharing some priceless gems from your day as a Chazer and Maniach. So again, these two names. The big takeaway from the entire talk for me was the idea of learning a Hanocha. You made an interesting point of how a Sikh is much more academic and you cannot really get the feeling for what was going on at the Fabrengen. Let me explain what I mean, Sikh. It means Lukute Sikh is that were adapted from one of the talks of the entire Fabrengen. So, more academic. It was more focusing on one particular theme. It wasn't a reflection of the entire Fabrengen. That's what I said. I just want to explain. The Rebbe's feelings from a Sikha, that was not captured in a particular Lukutei Sikh, because that the focus, again, is on one Rashi, a Rambam, a Hadran, in Yenich Siddhis. Whereas Hanocha was a reflection of the Rebbe's entire Fabrengen, the first Sikha, the second Sikha, the Nigunim, the L'chaim, things that happen in between. I definitely agree. Just the past Purim, I was learning Belaila Hu Tovshin Chof, 5720, the Maimer, classic Maimer that Rebbe said in that year. I also happened to look at the Fabreng of that year for it, and it added so much enjoyment and life into the Maimer itself. I wanted to ask, although your schedule is probably beyond busy, what are the chances that you could do some type of regular scheduled class on going through some of the edited Hanochas which you wrote? I have heard you speak many times regarding the different ones you have written up, and it always excites me. But after listening to this recent class you did, I thought it would really be something special to actually listen to a class where you yourself go through one which you yourself had the merit to write. Maybe something in honor of Yud Aleph Nissen. I really appreciate everything you do, and I've been an avid listener to you for many years now. You have really assisted me in maturing in my learning of Chassidus and overall understanding of the Rebbe and his kashrus. Keep up the amazing work. Thank you. Well, thank you. So I definitely would consider it. I'm actually thinking of doing a part two. Any of you want to see that, it's quite a long, maybe 3-hour Fabrengen or talk I gave about Sikhes with many examples, the whole process and different interesting anecdotes around the editing and the behind the scenes. It's called The Secrets of a Chazer, about many of my experiences over the years that you can check out online at our website, either meaningfullife.com or chassidusapplied.com, and also our YouTube channel, which has been recently skyrocketing and growing, so you can subscribe and check that out there. Okay. And so therefore my answer is yes, I plan on doing more, and I definitely do it from time to time. I'm not sure in what type of schedule, but I'll keep you posted. Stay tuned. Since this week, before Pesach, is also Yud Gimel Nissen. Yud Gimel Nissen is the Hilula, Stalkus, Yortzeit of the Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek in Tofresh Chav Vav. So that would make it, Tofshin Chav Vav would be 100 years. From Chav Vav now we're in Pei Gimel. So Chav to Pei is 7 years, I think is correct. Yeah. 20 to 80, 267 years. 267 years. So what comes to mind, just one thought, is a beautiful letter that Rebbe wrote for Pesach in the year Tavshin Chavov, which was the 100th centennial. Tzemach Rebbe Kochtzich then a lot about the 100th centennial of the Tzemach Tzedek's Histalkus in Tavshin Chavov. So Tavshin Chavov, 1966. And the letter, he talks about Tzemach Tzedek, he talks about all the qualities of the Tzemach Tzedek. He was a Nosi, a Tzadik, a Lamdan, a Gon, a Nigla, a Pesik, a Chsidis, a Makubal, a bunch of other list of other things. So the question is, how does that relate to us, a person of that stature? And yet, a Nosi B'Yisrael means we all have something to learn from him, and we all have him within us in a certain way, like the Moshe within each one of us. And the Rebbe gives a Moshe, an interesting Moshe. It says that in a drop of water, the entire sun is reflected just like an entire ocean. So even if you're only a drop, a small person, relatively, you reflect the entire sun. And Pnei Meshek, Pnei Chama, Pnei Shem, Meshek is like compared to a sun. The Nasi Adar, like the Meshek of the generation. So even a small drop is reflected all of the Tzemach Tzedek, and that's why all his qualities we can learn from and internalize. But Rebbe said, but three conditions. For that drop of water to reflect the sun, it needs to be clean, rain, it needs to be klar, clear, transparent, can't be cloudy, and it has to face the sun. Tremendous lesson, talk about his kashrus, your aleph nissen. So you need to be clean, meaning not to have any pollution in there and any dirt, any toxins. So it can reflect properly. It needs to be clear. So not mixed with other things, with anything cloudy, anything that obstructs. And you need to face the Rebbe. You need to face the sun. In other words, if you're not facing the sun, you're not going to reflect the sun. You need to be committed, dedicated. I think it speaks for itself, the lesson, both for Yud Gimel Nissen and also for Yud Aleph Nissen for that matter. Okay. So now let's move over to Pesach. Being that later this week will be Pesach, I should add, since the Rebbe Kochtzich also, that Yud Aleph Nissen, Erev Pesach, is the birthday of the Rambam. So we have the birthday Yud Aleph Nissen of the Rebbe, Yud Gimel Nissen, the Stalkus of the Tzemach Tzedek, the birthday of the Rambam. And indeed, Achon Shapesach, Tov Shem Mem Dalet, is when the Rebbe, right after that, the end of that Pesach, that year, 1984, the Rebbe came out with the Takana to learn three Prakim Rambam, or one Perek, or Sefer HaMitzvahs, to finish either once a year or once in 3 years. Because the Rambam encompasses, as the Rebbe said, Kol HaTeira, so it would unite all the Jews with the whole Teira, which is an excellent preparation to the Geula. So good to mention as well, Yud Dalet Nissen, of the Rambam, and emphasis, of course, in one of the major takonis of the Rebbe, to increase in the emphasis and the intensity of learning Rambam, and stronger commitment to it. And we saw the Rebbe himself, how he not only learned it, he would explain it on Shabbosim, so many times in the car going to the oil. Other times you saw the Rebbe actually learning the Rambam. So good thing to emphasize as well as we move into the birthday of the Rambam. So now let's move to Pesach. From Yud Aleph Nissen, we go to Tezvav Nissen. Erev Pesach into Pesach. The truth is, the whole month of Nissen, even 30 days before Nissen, already starting from Purim time, we already begin to prepare for Pesach, Shleishim Yom Kedem Achag. But obviously it increases and accelerates as we get closer, now literally in the week. As we know, 4 days before Pesach, that's when they began preparing for the Korban Pesach. So definitely worthwhile to talk about Pesach and the Chassidus applied to Pesach. So overall, there's so much to say about Pesach as it is about every matter in Torah. Afochbo, v'afochbo, tekulabo. In Torah, as you keep turning, you always find another dimension. Overall, Pesach, in English, Passover, is the idea of transcendence. Transcending mitzorim v'gvulim, yitzias mitzrayim, transcending all our limitations, all our obstacles, all constraints, all impediments. Psychologically speaking, fears, insecurities, traumas, all the things that block us, that don't allow us to be the best we can be, to live up to our calling, to live up to the divine mission for which we were sent to this world. That's why Pesach is so central. Tzias Mitzrayim, Zechri Tzias Mitzrayim. Every day we mention it. And more than once a day. So many mitzvahs are connected to it. And especially Pesach itself, the whole Seder, and the whole 7, 8 days of Pesach, all dedicated to this theme. And how do you achieve that? First of all, obviously concentrating it through the tefillahs and the mitzvahs and the menhagim of this day. One of the things that stands out is the eating of matzah and the avoidance, by all means, of chametz. Matzah represents humility, chametz represents ego. What's the best way to get beyond impediments? Is get yourself out of the way. Get your inflated ego, represented by bread, out of the way. And experience humility, which opens you up to higher truths. See, even the things that may have been blocking you, the mitzrayim in your lives, the mitzrayim v'gvulim that each person has, and everyone has their thing. So yes, there are ways to fight the mitzrayim v'gvulim directly. Sometimes that's what you need to do. But the best way is to transcend, go beyond it, go l'chatchila riber, above it all. And above it all is by connecting. We talked before about facing the sun. Connecting to a cause greater than yourself and your needs is the healthiest and best way to transcend all the limitations. Now some will say, but I'm limited at that. Limitation doesn't let me transcend. Well, it's not that simple. Sometimes that's what you have to work toward. Commit to something very powerful and commit to it in a way that is not optional, and that alone can carry you. In the words of Rav Meir Mepremishlan, I'm a sugi bun eben fat minishtun. When you're tied above, you don't fall below. If you look at people who've suffered, God forbid, and no one should know of it, people who have not just survived it, but have endured and have grown and thrived, like it says about Mitzrayim, as they were afflicted in direct proportion to that, they thrived and they flourished. You'll see one key thing to the formula. They didn't allow themselves to be defined by their suffering. They didn't allow themselves to be defined by their circumstances. They transcended. How? They connected to something greater than themselves. Tavnas alikim ala arazah. We're here, we're going through these difficult times, yes, but we know we have our eyes set to a mountain. We have our eyes set to the promised land. We know we're going somewhere. There's a purpose to it all. The neshama knows that even when it comes down below, it always remains a flickering flame that's faced upward. The drop is faced toward the sun. Shem Shemog and Hashem Elikim. And the sun as it's reflected in Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Moshe of every generation, the Rebbe of every generation. That what? That we connect to something greater. Dedicate yourself completely to it, and automatically it weakens the hold of the forces that, the gravitational forces that keep us trapped, the inertia, the status quo. It is definitely the best solution. I'm not suggesting, like in anything, sometimes you have something, a real impediment that you have to deal with right now. But let's be honest, if you think in healing, focusing purely on fixing what's broken or dealing with the demons, besides the fact that it keeps you absorbed with that, it's not solvable always. Yes, you can remedy it, you can balm it, you can numb it to some extent. But at the end of the day, it's not fighting darkness as the key. It's bringing more light into the world. And it's something that needs to be emphasized, especially today, with so much focus. And perhaps rightly so, many of the negative things we've experienced. But to dwell in it and keep on licking our wounds and saying, yes, I identify with it because so many people have silenced me. The silencing is not right. That's why Pesach is all about asking questions and dialogue and conversation. Pesach, speaking mouth, magid. We speak up. The greatest freedom is to be able to speak and break the silence. But at the same time, the opposite of breaking the silence doesn't mean just talking all the time about your misery and letting others help acknowledge the misery. It's also to tell you have a neshama, a beautiful soul. And that soul is higher than any negative thing that ever experienced. And all the mitzrayim that we talked about, vodim ayinu, beretz mitzrayim, yes, that's how we begin, by saying what happened. But we move into then the Nigla Aleim Melech Malchem Lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Galam. Then God revealed himself and freed them. And B'chol Der V'Der, yes, there are negative forces, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzaleinu Miyadam. God saves us from it. So it's connecting to the higher forces that allow us to rise up and transcend. That's a general lesson from Pesach, for all of us. To get into more specifics, and have quite a few questions, let's see how much we can actually cover. Try our best here. So, in order, I'm just going the order of a number of these questions. What is the significance of burning the chametz? Burning the leavened bread. Chametz, which is the name for bread, on Pesach it's whole chametz. All year round, it's not just kosher, it's a mitzvah to eat, especially on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But on Pesach, you burn the chametz. Why is not, does it not suffice if we're just removed from the home and put in the garbage? Or taken further from the home and tossed in a river? Is there a connection to the teaching that we have to be careful when discarding cut fingernails? And there are many ways to do it, but a true chassid burns the nails. Okay, an interesting double question here. So, burning according to Torah and Halacha is tashbisu. That's the way you actually eliminate something completely. To take it far away is so you mekayim lo yirov lo yimatsu. You can't see it and you can't find it. But you're not mekayim mitzvah of tashbisu, to eliminate it. What is the significance of eliminating it, not just getting it out of your possession, out of your property, or even tossing it in the river? Is because it's not just about, there's the gavra part of it, which is you not experiencing chametz. Chametz representing ego. Chametz representing the inflated ego. So Pesach, we have to stay away from that. But there's something more than it. You want to burn it out. You want to cleanse it. You want to completely eliminate it. And completely eliminate it doesn't just mean sending it off somewhere, which is a beginning, but not ultimately. The mitzvah is also to completely eliminate it. And the way you do that is through burning. Now remember, when you burn something, it leaves ashes. It doesn't completely destroy it. And even what you burn turns into energy. So the Alter Rebbe indeed explains about Zeis Chukas HaTeira, that when you burn the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, the ash represents the Koyach HaMesave, the power of desire, but not the actual desire. Because that's rooted, you said, it's rooted in a high place. So here too, the ego itself can be used in a very negative way, but the actual force of it can be also directed properly. At the end of the day, matzah is made also of grain. So matzah shmura, as we'll talk about, water and grain, but that's protected from ego. It's humble bread, humility. So it's not complete elimination. However, from a point of view of Allah, of eliminate, you've eliminated completely the chometz part of it. And that's what the key thing is to keep in mind. Is it connected to the case where the chassid burns the nails is considered to be lefnim eshur hasadin, chassid serfan, because burning something of your own nails can be a sakana for you. I don't see really the connection there at all. Maybe it has to be thought through, but I don't see the connection, because there, as I said, there's no sakana in burning chametz. So that's not, and it's also not lefnim eshur hasadin, that's the halachi, you'll have to burn the chametz. Whereas the nails is either burying it is what Russia doesn't do anything to it, and it's tzaddik will bury it, but that still can leave us some possible sakana. And a chassid will burn it, so it'll never affect anybody, a pregnant woman that it can be a sakana for. But I don't see the connection to Pesach. Why is it important to eat handmade matzah instead of machine-made matzah? Is there a reason shmura matzah is round while machine matzah is square? Is there a significance to the shape? Okay, so we have a shmartimus matzahs. So it's not just to bake matzahs and not just to eat matzahs, v'achaltem, but also v'shmartem. So from there we learn out shmira, and there's the two opinions, whether shmira from the time that you actually harvest it or from the time that you actually thresh it. So bottom line is, it has to be protected from any type of extra water or the other things, the whole process in protection. That's shmura matzah. That's why it's called shmura matzah, shmartim, from the word v'shmartim. And people are extremely careful with that, based on that, especially Pesach. You want to be careful of every crumb, of every, even iota, of ego, using that explanation of chametz. Chametz is also sometimes called the yetzer hara. So you want to eliminate it in every way and protect it. You guard it. You watch it. When something is precious to you, you keep watch over it. And that's called shmura matzah. Machine matzah, no one ever said machine matzah, God forbid, is osur. But it's not, because it could also be watched. You could have some watches over the machines. But it doesn't have quite the same, and some feel that means it has to be handmade, meaning hand-watched, not just someone's watching the machine that's preparing the matzahs. As far as square and round, round became the symbol of handmade matzah. Practically speaking, it's the easiest way when you roll it. It's very hard to get it into a square. You need a machine for that, to cut it. And this way it rolls into a that's on a practical level. I would assume it also symbolizes Shmura Matzah, because you know for sure that it was handmade. Can you hand make a square? You could. And you could probably make machine matzahs that are round too. They don't do it for that distinction. I haven't heard any deeper Kabbalistic or Chassidish reason. I know we have a concept of ribua and eagle, especially in Kabbalah. There's the tzimtzum of ribua, the square tzimtzum, and there's the eagle tzimtzum. I've not heard anyone connect that to the matzahs. I mean, you could talk about matzah circle as in makif. It does say it's makif from the Abba. Matzah is makif from the Abba. And they serve in a way, by the kaida, they serve like, essentially like a container for the kaida, for the Seder plate. The Rebbe has a whole letter about it to explain what that means. Is it a ur? Is it a keli? But bottom line is, I've not heard significance of the round matzah, but I may be, I didn't hear it. If anyone has any information on that, a sikha from the Rebbe or somewhere that someone wrote about it, by all means. As I said, you could speculate, but I just said I gave some asias and makifim, or the union of tzimtzum of eagle versus meruba. Meruba being one that has edges, that has structure. Eagle is more of an infinite entity. There's no top and bottom. But that's already, as I said, my own feeling or my hergesh or own interpretation. Okay. Why in some places is matzah called bread of affliction, lechem eini, or sometimes lechem eini, like the bread of the impoverished, and other places called bread of freedom, like we say michle das fusa, michle de memnusa, bread of faith, the bread of healing. It's connected to cheiros, freedom. These two terms seem opposite. Is there a multi-dimensionality about matzah that it can represent either or both of those ideas? The answer is correct, exactly right. True humility is not annihilation. Humility, in this case, affliction, is not an end in itself, God forbid. It's meant to eliminate the negative ego to then allow in, like we say, nafshi la ka'ofer la kel tiyah. My spirit is ka'ofer, it's like dust, which is a negative. It's humble before all. And then what does it say? Psach libi b'seira secha. Open my heart to Torah. So the way to open yourself is mina meitzer karosi ka, meitzer, like mitzadim, meitzer. From the narrow straits, I call out to you, anani b'merchav ka. Then you respond to me in expansiveness. So the way to reach expansiveness is by diminishing ourselves. That's called bittul. So bittul, on one hand, is an element of like affliction or impoverishment, eini. On the other hand, that opens us up to the greatest harchev picha v'amalehu, to a higher state of expansiveness. Brief. My 12-year-old son asked me a good question. If eating matzah represents being humble, why don't we eat it every day instead of only on Pesach? The best answer I could think of is that as Chassidim, we are instructed to take the middle path. Once a year for 8 days, the Torah gives us a reminder to check out arrogance, to check our arrogance. And if we have any, we should discard it and return to the middle path. If we did things every day of the year to make ourselves humble, we might become too humble to the point where we are treated as doormats and people walk all over us. That's not the correct way. The point is to do our best to stay on the middle path. Can you please ask Rabbi Jacobson if he knows any deeper answers to this that is spoken about in Chassidus? Thank you. Well, what I know is exactly what you said. I'll just rephrase it. I have talked about it, I believe, even last week, previous weeks for sure. And it's similar to what we spoke about, the two names for matzah. That's exactly right. Eating chametz or eating bread is not an isser all year round. As a matter of fact, it's a mitzvah. On Shabbos, you're supposed to wash and eat bread. On Shavuos, shtei halechem, the carbon of shtei halechem, the two loaves. In the Beis HaMikdash, There was a lechem every day in the shulchan, fresh bread. Not kosher. On the contrary, it's completely kosher. So that's not the issue. The issue is that once a year, exactly as you say, you want to put like the full assault against the ego. And then once you have reached that level, then you can then spills over that when you go the day after Pesach, as soon as you're able to eat chametz, the chametz is now eaten with that elevated consciousness, with that elevated egolessness. But as you said also, even at Talmud Chacham needs shminis shebishminis, an eighth of self. It's not about annihilating the self, as I spoke earlier about chametz and bread. So on Pesach, we eliminate the chametz. Indeed, chametz and matzah, we know the same letters. Ches mem tzadik hey. The only difference is the ches and the hey. And the hey and the ches are also similar. The only difference is the space, that little opening of bittel that the hey offers that the ches has closed up. So you see from that again, it's not about complete antithetical. They're made of the same ingredients, except you can use it in an egotistic and arrogant and inflated way, or you can use it in a very humble way, where the ego is used for the right purposes. V'salcha b'rechava, to go with expansiveness, to go with a ge'en yankif, with pride. That's also part of serving God. Not just to be completely feel like we're nobodies. It's like the Alter Rebbe says, to know how small you are and how great you can become. Next question. There are some families that have teenagers that are off the derech and they won't invite those teenagers to the Seder. Firstly, I want to just qualify. I don't like the word off the derech. No, it says, chanech l'tar al pidarkei gam ki yaskin l'yosim. That's what we know the Torah says. So I just don't like that expression. I don't like to use it, but the person who's writing it, we understand your point. But here's it. They won't invite those teenagers to the Seder. I disagree with those who refuse to extend invitations, and I feel that's not the proper way. The Agoda clearly says there are four archetypes of children: the wise, the evil, the simple, and the child who doesn't know how to ask questions. In the Agoda, they do invite the Ider Rasha, the evil son, so that's why we should also invite every child. What compromises should these families make so that these Seders can be more inclusive to those who don't share the same ideologies and practices, but at the same time still maintain the proper respect and decorum during the Seder and to make sure it's halachically kosher Seder? Okay. I'm glad you bring it up. Someone else will put it this way. Should we refuse to invite any wayward children to the Seder? The answer is absolutely not. It's as clear as day what the Seder says. The Rebbe even adds that there's the fifth child who doesn't even come to the Seder. And even that child we have to invite. Tinuk Shanishba does not aware. So there's no such thing as excluding someone, especially Pesach. But Chol in general is not ever a time to exclude anyone, especially in our day and age. If you bring up a situation, a scenario, which is not so common, that someone wants to sit at the Seder and do things that are disrespectful and offend the people, well, what would you say to anybody? Forget about Yiddishkeit right now. Somebody is coming to the table and doing things that are disgusting. So you usually tell a person like that, you know, you're an adult, other people here, you don't behave a certain way, an atrocious way, obnoxious way. So I think you could speak to someone who's doing something that's offensive. If it's lahachis, there are children in a family who for some reason feel the need to be very disrespectful. So that's already a situation, case by case. We have to prepare beforehand. You don't want to offend anyone else, but you also don't want to ever not include somebody to say that. We're not talking about destructive. Pikuach nefesh, someone's coming to the Seder, God forbid, with a knife, with a gun, and hurting others. Obviously, we understand what you have to do. And you have to obviously tell them, please. But if it doesn't work, then you're dealing with something that's, as I said, that's an extreme. I don't think that's the case with this. But the question of their level of commitment, even if they're completely not committed, even if it was a stranger, we invite them to the table, let alone our own family member. It's not even a question. And adarab, that's our challenge. On the contrary, to make the Seder so alive and so passionate, so exciting, that even a child like that will be inspired. When I say child, I mean it could be an adult child, but I mean to say a child of this family's. And if it's any day lishal, at psachle, help inspire for him to speak. And the Rosh we also have an answer to. And even though the answer sounds like knock out his teeth, no. There are many meanings behind that. It means that you're challenging, you do not accept his negativity. You challenge the negativity, but you embrace the person. The sin should be erased, never the person. So that's a whole other discussion, how to do that. We've talked about that many times. It all comes down to deep love and deep compassion and recognizing that we're all, none of us are perfect. And we're here Pesach to celebrate all the freedom of all of us and help that person find freedom from their own inner struggles, their inner darkness, or whatever it is that's troubling that child. So that's the quick answer to that. I see I have so much more. Okay, let's see what we can do here. Are Jews in prison required to do a Seder? Because technically they're not free. Or is there something spiritual that the Seder accomplishes regardless of where in life a person finds themselves? Absolutely. Who needs more Seder than someone in prison? Once the Eden left Mitzrayim, especially according to the Maral, they became fundamentally free people. So even if they ever are imprisoned or in Golis, their spirits are free. And that's why we celebrate Pesach, with the goal of Lashon Haba B'Yerushalayim, which can be immediate, to free ourselves from all our constraints, including people in prison. So on the contrary, they may need it even more than anyone. They need it like everyone needs it, but because they are in prison, that's what the whole Pesach is about. And it's indeed, you see, chol der v'der chayev adam liras asasmi kilu yatsim mitzrayim. For some people, it's very obvious. Some people, you could ask the same question. What happens if you're in your prison of your own mind, the prison of your own heart, addictions? You don't have to be sitting behind bars. You can be behind bars even when you're moving about, even at a Pesach table. So you could say, that's what Pesach is for, is to identify the mitzrayim, the mitzanim v'gvulim, the limits and constraints and in your life, and free yourself and transcend that. Did the Jews build the pyramids in Egypt? And did the Rebbe ever speak about it? This is what they show in the pictures. However, my principal told me not to teach the kids this. What do you say? Thanks so much for everything you do for us. It's already been established that the pyramids were built earlier and has nothing to do with the Jews. So that's just a quick, fast answer, and that's that. So there's no connection. Yes, they built Pisim V'Ramses, they built limestone, different things, Avedis Perech, Chemer B'Levenim, but had nothing to do with the pyramids. Okay. There are some more questions, but simply time limits. So let me just do a few other things, and then we'll conclude. It's a follow-up to last week. We spoke about the protests in Israel. I spoke at length about what insight, what we can learn from it. And above all, the message that this, when you see things like that, such disparity, such discord, such differences, to the point of divisiveness, it's time to even increase even more in our avos and achdus Yisrael. That's what it comes down to. That's what we need to do. We don't reject, on the contrary. We need to welcome and teach and be able to speak and even hear someone that you may not agree with. So the idea that this should create even more divisiveness, God forbid. Pesach teaches exactly that. We all sit at the table. So I would come out with a major call to every Jew in Israel, every Jew in the world. This Pesach, let's all sit together. Invite your neighbors. Invite especially the neighbors that may have different opinion than you. That beautiful scene in Bnei Brak. Welcome them in. You never know, you touch a soul, you touch a neshama. That's what's required more than ever. More than politics, more than negotiations, and more all the discussions. We do that to create a revolution of such love, of unconditional love, inviting. Hey lach ma'anya, kol dechvin yesev v'yechol. Invite everyone. And those that are ignorant or do not know, even more so. That's the call of the hour. And that's what we learn when we see something of that nature. Instead of starting to demonize and say, look what's this with these liberals, look at them, fighting the religious, fighting the right, etc., or the right fighting the left. We're all brothers, we're all sisters. Let's all come together in an unbelievable, unprecedented show of unity. The more you see that, the more the unity has to be emphasized. And with that, somebody wrote a follow-up and saying, thank you so much for your words of wisdom and balance. I have some friends and relatives in Israel, and I'm going to suggest exactly what you had said, that people should invite each other and welcome each other and show more love than ever before. Okay, thank you. Another person writes, I think it's ironic that 500,000 anti-religious Israelis got together to march and protest against reforms in the courts. And technically, since it's Hakel year, by default, their assembly was a great Hakel gathering. I agree. Interestingly, one way or another, they joined in the Hakel gathering, Anoshim Noshim B'Taf. But now let's make sure that it's a Hakel gathering of all of us, from all persuasions. And this doesn't mean we have to agree. It doesn't mean we can totally disagree. But not personalized. This is family. This is all one. We're all one entity. And on the contrary, if you see that, that's part of you. The Yerushalmi says we're all part of one body. Can you imagine the right hand hitting the left hand? Literally, right and left. Right wing and left wing. It's all part of one body. You don't say my right hand is right wing and my left hand is left wing. We're all part of one body, one healthy organism. We need each other. That should be the attitude. Okay, so with that, let us conclude. I think that's a good note to conclude. Tzias Mitzrayim, Avas and Achdus Yisrael in the deepest possible way. This has been my life, Chassidus Applied. Everyone should have a kosher and afreilich in Pesach, starting with today, Yom Haledus of the Rebbe, that leads us to that type of approach. Seeing Tzias Mitzrayim of Gvulim includes the Mitzrayim of Gvulim of our differences, the thing the Rebbe so fought for and continues to fight for. Accept and embrace every Jew, no matter who you are. Bring a matzah to a Jew. That's what you do before Pesach. No matter who, you don't start asking questions. What's your persuasion? What type of political opinions do you have? Bring a matzah, bring wine, invite them to the table. So may it be a kosher and freilich on Pesach, a Pesach of total achdus. And Hashem should see that in Barchenu Avinu Kolonu Ke'echad, that our Father in Heaven blesses us when He sees we're together. We should march. For the Shon HaBob Yerushalayim, it should be Yerushalayim Yir HaKedosh this Pesach with the Korban Pesach, with Mashiach Tzidkenu, even before Pesach. Like we say, B'nissen Nigalu, B'nissen Asidin Ligol. Everyone have a kosher and freilich on Pesach. Next week, there won't be a program due to Chol HaMoed. We will resume right after Pesach, 2 weeks. It should be a transcendent and meaningful Pesach that should extend throughout the year in every possible freedom, Gashmis and Beruchnis.
This program is brought to you by My Life, Chassidus Applied. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at chassidusapplied.com/donate.